Hey guys, what is up? Welcome to episode number 13 of Being Famous Podcast. Lucky episode number 13. My name is Cliff. As always, guys, hope everyone all around the world is doing well and staying safe. If you would like more information about me and this podcast, please check out my webpage at beingfamouspodcast.com. There you can also listen to previous episodes. You can also listen to all previous episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartMedia. If you would like to get all the latest podcast information and updates, follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Being Famous Podcast. All right, guys, let's get on with it. Here we go. Episode number 13 is in full effect. You've seen him in Teen Wolf, Beverly Hills Brats, JAG, Beverly Hills 90210, Arrested Development, and of course, the 1987 classic movie Can't Buy Me Love, where he played the role of Quint. Still acting today, but his primary focus is now stand-up comedy. Let's welcome to the podcast, Court McCown. Court, welcome, my man. It is great to have you on.
It's great to be here, man. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to the grilling.
Yeah, man. No, not a lot of grilling that's going to take place. It'll be pretty painless, I promise. But we do have a lot to talk about, Court, so let's get right to it. I know you reside in LA, but you're not from Los Angeles originally, correct?
No, I grew up in Oklahoma, man. I lived in Oklahoma till I was 20 years old.
Gotcha.
And then I moved to Los Angeles.
What took you to LA?
What took me to LA? I went on vacation. I had a friend. I went to school at Oklahoma State. I was in school in Stillwater, and I don't know that I was doing very well. I was a DJ in college. I was studying television and film, and you know.
Okay.
And I had a friend that lived in Los Angeles, lived in Hollywood, and he was trying to work as an actor, and he was working as like a stand-in on TV shows and stuff. And he was back in Stillwater, and we were like, it was like a great time. We were hanging out, you know, partying, having fun. And he's like, man, you should come out to Hollywood sometime. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm going to come out to Hollywood. And I think he thought I was kidding. And so I bought a ticket because I knew the Summer Olympics were there. It was the 1984 Summer Olympics were in Los Angeles. And so I bought a ticket to go out there. And, you know, make a long story short, I basically went on set with him the very first day that I was there. I think I flew in on like a Sunday or Monday night. And he's like, man, I got you a job working as an extra tomorrow if you want to do it.
Nice.
And I was like, sure. I didn't know what that was. You know, I didn't know what it meant. And it paid like $100 for the day. And I was like, 1984, that was a lot of money.
Sure.
You know, especially for a 20-year-old college kid.
Yeah.
You know, make $100 for one day of really not doing anything. And I ended up going to work with him. And I ended up getting hired as John Stamos's photo double that day when I was there.
Crazy.
So I ended up moving to LA. I never went back to Stillwater. I mean, I went back to get my clothes.
Right.
But I just never went back. It was awesome. And I lived there. And it was, I guess they say the rest is history, but it's like, yeah, I just kind of like, I was like, why am I in Stillwater? Why am I in Oklahoma? I don't hate Oklahoma. I like Oklahoma. I was just back there for my mom's birthday. It's a wonderful place to grow up. I love growing up, you know, in some place like that. But nothing great was coming out of living there. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, gotcha. Very cool story. I myself, Court, also did the whole radio DJing thing in college as a communications major myself. Court, who was your buddy? Who was the guy that was living in LA that actually got you to go to LA? Who was that guy?
Yeah, it was a guy named Larry Doherty. Larry may be one of the greatest human beings on the planet. Larry, what he does now is he's back in Oklahoma. He's got a wife, he's got family and everything like that. And Larry is a clown, like a, you know, knows the whole nine yards, and he goes to hospitals and entertains sick children.
Oh yeah. Okay. That's cool. Yeah. Larry's a good dude.
I mean, how do you, it's like the greatest, that's like the greatest human being on the planet right there.
Certainly has to be a rewarding gig. That's for sure. Court, did you graduate from Oklahoma State?
No, sir. I do not have a college degree.
Gotcha. So you're in LA for like a day or two, and Larry gets you this gig as John Stamos's photo double of all things. What was that TV show?
It was a TV show called Dreams, and it was John Stamos's first primetime job. It was him, Jamie Gertz. I'm trying to think who else was in that thing. Oof. I can't even remember all the people's names, but it was like this. It was a TV show about a bunch of kids that worked in a bar and had a band. The old TV show. It was a CBS show. It only lasted one season, then it got canceled.
That's pretty funny. Court, how many episodes of that TV show did you do?
I did 14 or 15.
All right. Well, damn, that ain't bad, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So I came in, they probably were about 2 or 3 weeks in.
Okay.
I think it was. And then I worked for like 6 or 7 weeks. And then we had a week off where I went to Oklahoma and got all my stuff and then came back. And I never left.
That's good stuff, man. Where exactly do you live in LA?
I live over by, do you know LA at all?
Yep, I do.
So I live over near an area called The Grove.
Yep, know it well.
The Grove and the Beverly Center. So it's like I live in kind of like Beverly Hills, West Hollywood adjacent.
Gotcha. Yeah. And for the people listening who don't know, The Grove is basically like this huge kind of like entertainment shopping type complex in LA. Court, how do you like Los Angeles?
I love it.
What do you love about it?
Well, I'm a stand up. So it's like, we have so many great clubs there. There's, I've been a regular at the Comedy Store for 17 years now. So you have the Comedy Store, you have the Ice House, another phenomenal comedy club. You have the Hollywood Improv, you have Laugh Factory, you have the Comedy and Magic Club. There's several other places that do comedy that are in. And what's great about them is they're not, in any city, like with the exception of New York and LA, most cities, they have one or two clubs, or if some place only have one club, like in Charlotte, there's the Comedy Zone.
Right.
Phenomenal comedy club.
Yep.
But Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night is a headliner show. So there's a headliner that's there and it's a big name headliner. And, that's the show Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. And there's an MC, a middle and a headliner. And that's the way it goes. And, in Los Angeles at the Comedy Store, there's a different comic every 15 minutes. There's three showrooms and it starts at 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock and goes till 2 in the morning. And, it's just different. You go to New York and there's 10 great, the clubs that I work at in New York are The Stand, which is a phenomenal comedy club, New York Comedy Club. And then there's also the Comedy Cellar, which are three clubs I've been lucky enough to play in New York. And it's a different show every 2 hours. And it's like, and it's a whole bunch of different comics. And there's a lot of huge headliners if they're not out of town that weekend, but it's always great shows. They're always great comics from top to bottom. So you don't get that, here. If you live in Charlotte and you're not a huge, and if you are a huge headliner, then it doesn't really matter. You're traveling outside. You're traveling every weekend.
I see.
But if you're, if you're not a huge headliner, you really don't have a lot of options. You can't really do comedy Fridays, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. In LA, I can play the Comedy Store, on Thursday night. I can do a spot Thursday night at the Comedy Store. I can do one at the Improv and the Laugh Factory all in the same night. And then I can go the next night, I can do the Ice House Comedy Store, Comedy Magic. So you can, you can do a lot of spots. You can work on your material, which is what those clubs are for. They're for working on your material.
Cool. Yeah. And I appreciate the explanation and how that works. And I've been to the Comedy Zone here in Charlotte a couple of times, not a lot, but just a few times. Court, want to talk about your comedy stuff in just a little bit, but let's circle back around to your acting career. I'm guessing the whole Dreams thing where you played John Stamos's photo double is pretty much what I guess launched or what was the beginning of your acting career, correct?
Well, it's what obviously propelled it. But I mean, yeah, what happened was, is, you know, I'd always, you know, when I was a kid, even in junior high, I did theater, believe it or not. In Oklahoma, we actually had a woman that taught theater, and, you know, we did these like summer theater. We did like summer theater in Oklahoma. It was weird.
Interesting.
And so it's what I always wanted to do. And it was just like, but when I got that job, I ended up started going to acting classes and, you know, and then, you know, started kind of working my way into that. And then, you know, and then I got lucky is the guy that was, the guy that was the second assistant director on Dreams, when that show was over, he called me and my friend Larry, and he said, I'm doing this movie and I need two guys that are going to be on a high school basketball team. And he goes, and I need two guys I trust. You know, I need two guys that I can count on, because extra work, if you want to call it that, it's like it's background or whatever. There's not a lot of people that'll show up. And he goes, I need two guys for 6 weeks. He goes, you're going to work every day. And I just need to know that I can count on you. And we'd worked with this guy on this TV show. So he trusted us. And we looked like we could still be in high school. So, and we're like, yeah, man. And it was this movie called Teen Wolf. And so, you know, we got to, you know, it was great. And I'm in that entire goddamn movie. And I never got credit for it. I think Larry did, but we had lines, they cut lines. It was like this kind of deal back then. If you had a speaking line, you got paid a lot more, and they didn't want to pay us more. It was a very low, low, low budget movie. It was Michael J. Fox's first movie he ever did. And, you know, so that was before he did Back to the Future. And so he did that movie. We finished that movie, and he ended up getting Back to the Future right after that. And they were very smart, the people that did Teen Wolf. When they found out that he got Back to the Future, they decided to not release Teen Wolf until after Back to the Future.
Yeah, man, definitely a good call by the studio on that one. And yes, that was Michael J. Fox's first role as a lead in a movie, of course, that would be Teen Wolf. Prior to Teen Wolf, however, he did appear in the class of 1984, also Midnight Madness. Court, this is pretty interesting, man. I would have never thought that I would have gotten two actors from the movie Teen Wolf on this podcast, but I have, Court. I have also had Matt Adler on the podcast, who, of course, played the role of Lewis in the movie Teen Wolf. Court, do you happen to know Matt Adler?
I know Matt Adler very well. I love Matt Adler.
Very cool.
He's one of my favorite people. Yeah, Matt's a great guy. I actually saw him not that long ago, but we play golf together every now and then now. He's just a great guy. I've known Matt since 1985.
Very cool, which would make sense because that's the year that Teen Wolf came out. Court, let's take it one step further. Would you happen to know one of Matt's very good friends who has also been on this podcast named John Philbin?
I know John Philbin, yeah. So I used to live with a guy named Dean Cameron, and Dean Cameron was Chainsaw in Summer School, and he is really good friends with Philbin, and that's how I know Philbin.
Wow, that's pretty crazy, man. And yeah, Court, that right there is a podcast in itself that I'm sure could spawn a ton of stories. The fact that you lived with Dean Cameron, who played Chainsaw in Summer School. I actually got a message from a random listener that said, you need to get Dean Cameron on your podcast. So that is one guy that I will definitely be looking at in the future to get on the podcast. But yeah, man, wow, Court. Very, very, very small world, man. It's crazy.
It's just very, like, all of us that did like the 80s, that were around in the 80s, that did the 80s movies, because Matt did, I think, Aloha Summer or what was the wave, the Hawaii movie he did?
That's great. Aloha Summer. North Shore.
North Shore. So when I did, I remember, so I did So this was probably, let's see, January, February of 85, I did Teen Wolf. And then shortly after that, I got a job as a stand-in on a TV show called George Burns Comedy Week. And I want to say that might have been in 85. I can't remember. But I ended up getting my SAG card on that show. And then shortly after that, I got an agent and I auditioned. And I was auditioning for Can't Buy Me Love. And I saw Matt there. Matt was at the audition.
Okay, very cool.
And then I ended up getting that movie and I did that movie. And anyone that around that time, everybody was in the same shit.
That's awesome, man. That's so cool. Court, want to circle back around to Teen Wolf. You said you had some speaking lines. Those speaking lines were cut out of the movie. It can be confusing, but can you explain it? And that's got to suck for you, I guess, kind of sort of at that point in time, because if you do get speaking lines, and it's in the movie, that means you are now making more money. There's speaking lines, there's SAG, all that sort of stuff. It can get a bit confusing. Can you explain a little bit of that to the listeners and how that whole process works?
Well, it really kind of sucks because what they would do is if you weren't in the Screen Actors Guild, it's a very difficult thing to kind of try to explain. It's called Taft-Hartley. It's where if you're not in Screen Actors Guild and they give you a line, then it's called Taft-Hartley, and it's where you now can become a member of the Screen Actors Guild. In order to become a member of the Screen Actors Guild, you have to have a speaking line in a movie.
Okay.
In a union movie.
Gotcha.
And in order to get a union movie, you have to have a SAG card. So it's like you can't, you know, so it's very difficult. It's like, well, how do I get a SAG movie? And it's like, well, you have a SAG card. Well, how do I get a SAG card? Well, you have to be in a SAG movie. So it's just, you know, it's a difficult thing. But if you were on set and you ended up getting a line, which they would give you a line in the thing, and I was like in a party scene and they would give you a line, then you become Taft-Hartley and you become a SAG actor. So your rate for the day goes from 150 to 650. And then they can't bring you back the next day as a extra. They have to start paying you as a SAG actor because now you're an actor in the movie. You're not a background actor in the movie. So what they would do is if you would have a line, they would kind of just record it but not say anything. And then afterwards you would possibly get. It was a big kind of like the way they kind of fucked you out of stuff.
Ridiculous.
But to be honest with you, dude, I didn't care.
Yeah.
It was just, I was brand new.
Right.
I'd been in Los Angeles for less than 6 months and I had done a TV show and a movie. I was like, I'm killing it. You know?
Yeah, man, I completely get where you're coming from, but wow, man, what a difference. I mean, from being, you know, I guess like an extra for your day rate of being 150 to getting a line to where your rate is now $650 a day, man, that's a big difference. Court, staying on Teen Wolf, how close did you become with the other cast members? Did you get to know Michael J. Fox pretty well?
Well, definitely got to know Michael very well. I mean, he was just a really, really sweet, nice guy, you know? I remember, it's been a long time ago, but the one thing I remember was he had just bought his first new car and he bought, I think it was a 280 ZX.
Awesome.
You know, and it was the first car that had like the radio controls on the steering wheel. And it had like T-tops that you could take off. Nobody remembers T-tops, but they had like T-tops you could take off. And he would like, and he was a big smoker. He smoked, I remember he smoked Canadian export cigarettes. And I was a smoker then. I remember he would like go, hey man, let's go smoke a cigarette. And we would get in his car. We had the T-tops off and we would drive around the parking lot of the high school we were shooting at and smoke cigarettes. And he would be driving around changing the radio stations on the steering wheel. He was a really sweet guy, man. He could not have been a nicer guy.
That's a great story, man. And yeah, to be able to look back on life and go, yeah, you know, back in the day, I used to hang out with Michael J. Fox. We used to drive around in his 280 ZX and smoke cigarettes. That's fantastic. But yeah, Court, when I had Matt on the podcast, he said the same thing about Michael J. Fox. Just a nice, genuine, down-to-earth type guy.
Yeah, he was a great guy. I remember years, I think it was, God, it had to have been, I don't know how many years later, I got hired to do Family Ties. and I was on Family Ties, and he was, it was the second to the last episode of Family Ties, or second or third to the last episode of Family Ties.
Okay.
And he was married to Tracy Paulin, who he's married to now. And I played like Courtney Cox's new boyfriend. So it was like, you know, where she saw her all. It was like, I can't remember the fucking storyline. Who gives a shit? But
right.
I remember I had been in Europe working on a movie, and I came back. So I wasn't there for the table read. And I got there, like I did an audition. They hired me. And
heck yeah.
So it was really a nice thing. You know, I had worked for this. I had auditioned for this woman at probably 100 times. And she's like, no, he'll be perfect. Just hire him.
Nice.
So, and I came on for like the day before, like they film. It was a 3-camera show. So what they do in a 3-camera show is they'll have a table read on Monday. Then on Tuesday, they have the day off where they make changes. On Wednesday, they block where all the actors are going to be for the cameras. It's kind of a walkthrough. Then Thursday, they have a rehearsal. And then Friday night, they shoot. You know, that's just the way they do it. And I didn't even have to show up until Thursday. I had to show up Thursday for the walkthrough. And I showed up for the walkthrough, and he was there. And he's like, holy shit, Court. And we just chatted. And it was just like, he was the fucking sweetest guy.
That's great. And he was so good in Family Ties as Alex P. Keaton. That was a great TV show. When was the last time you talked to him?
That day.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, yeah, it's been a long, long time. Yeah.
Yeah, man, I totally get it. You know, I mean, people move on. You got your own thing going on. Completely understandable. Court, when was the last time that you talked to Matt Adler?
A few months ago, I saw him out at the, he's a member at this, this golf club in Los Angeles. And I saw him out there not that long ago.
Very cool. All right, Court, let's go ahead and jump ahead to 1987. You land the role of Quint in the 1987 teen classic movie, Can't Buy Me Love, starring Patrick Dempsey. I'm assuming at that point in time, you have an agent, you go in, you audition. Tell me about that process.
Yeah, I had gotten an agent, auditioned for a different role. And they were like, we don't think you're right for this. Why don't you come back and read for this role? It was a smaller role, whatever. I went in, booked it, and it was great. We went and shot the movie in Arizona, and then we finished shooting the movie, and it was originally called Boy Rents Girl. And then I had worked, oddly enough, when I went and shot that, I had actually worked with Patrick before on a TV show called Fast Times at Ridgemont High. They actually did a TV series of that.
Yep.
And I had actually worked with him on that. He played Damone in that TV series. So we had met before. And then I went and did this movie. And then we finished the movie. And I remember we were all like at a party. One of the guys was the co-producer, this guy, Mark Berg, great guy. And we were throwing a party at one of the actresses' houses. And they had everybody over there. And then, you know, it was like, we all became good friends, you know, on that movie. It was a low budget movie. You know, we all knew each other. We all became friends. And it was like, it was just like a great time. And then we're at this party, and Mark goes, hey, can I have everyone's attention? And he introduced this guy that he was with. And it was this guy, his name was Chris. I want to say like Chris Zarpis, or I can't remember the guy's name. I think that was it. And he worked for Touchstone for Disney. And he said, we bought your movie, and we're going to reshoot. We're going to go back to Arizona. We're going to reshoot some scenes.
Wow.
And we're going to put a bunch of money into this, and this is going to be a big movie. And we're like, holy shit, you know?
Nice.
Because we were just this, you know, low budget, you know, kind of romantic comedy called Boy Rents Girl. And we ended up going back to Arizona, reshot it. They bought the Beatles song, Can't Buy Me Love. They put it in 1,800 theaters, and we were the number one. We opened up number one that weekend. So,
wow, that's pretty crazy. It's really cool. Court, want to circle back around to your audition process. You said you went in and initially auditioned for a different role other than Quint. What was that role that you auditioned for?
I can't remember. I want to say it might have been like like Big John or something. I can't remember.
Yeah, man. I understand. That was a long time ago. And Court, that was shot in, I know it was shot in Arizona. Was it shot in Tucson?
Yeah. Tucson High School.
Yep. Gotcha. So what are you thinking at that point in time, Court, when you land the role of Quint in Can't Buy Me Love? I mean, this is going to be your first major movie. We talked about it earlier. You did Teen Wolf. You were uncredited, no speaking lines. In Can't Buy Me Love, you have speaking lines. There's a budget behind it. There's money behind it. It's your first major movie role. What are you thinking at that point in time?
It wasn't. At the time, I was just, it's like one of those things, you're just happy to be working.
Sure.
Just happy to get a job. And it wasn't a lot of money. You know, I don't think I made $10,000 even working on that thing. And I was just lucky. It was just lucky. And then,
yeah,
you know, it was great.
Yeah, for sure. How long did it take to shoot?
I think we shot that in like 6 weeks.
Nice. Pretty quick. How old were you at the time?
So 26, 87. I had to be like 22, 23.
That's great, man. 22, 23 years old playing a 17 or 18 year old kid. That's awesome. Court, what do you remember about the director, Steve Rash? What do you remember about working with him?
He was an awesome dude. I got to be pretty good friends with Steve. And I remember Steve and I actually hung out a bit after he finished the movie. We actually became pretty good friends. And I used to kind of run around with Steve a little bit, but then I kind of lost touch with him over the years, you know? But I knew Steve. Steve was a great guy, man. Steve directed Buddy Holly's Story. He did Son-in-Law with Paulie. Done some great. He's a great guy. He was a really, really, really nice guy. Just a really good guy. The guy that wrote it is a guy named Michael Swerdlick. And Michael Swerdlick was such a great dude. I remember we were on the plane ride going to Arizona the very first time. And it was because it's a low budget movie. He was constantly changing the script and he was adding. And my part was very small in the beginning. In the beginning, it was a very, very small part. I probably had 3 or 4 scenes. That was it. And he beefed it up a lot and just added me into this. It was great. I was really lucky. I was very fortunate.
Yeah, man. Very cool. And very cool that Michael Swerdlick worked you into the movie a little bit more. Swerdlick would go on to have a really nice career, worked on a bunch of huge TV shows, including Parker Lewis Can't Lose, Doogie Howser, Who's the Boss, Saved by the Bell, Beverly Hills 90210, and a bunch of other stuff. Court, here is my take on Can't Buy Me Love. 80s teen movies were huge. One of the biggest directors of 80s teen movies, of course, was John Hughes. Court, my take is that what Steve Rash did with Can't Buy Me Love holds up to anything that John Hughes did. What is your take on that?
Absolutely. And that's, you know, it's a big credit to Swerdlick and it's a big credit to, you know, Steve. Steve just did a phenomenal job. And, you know, on the other side of that too, which is that, you know, Patrick Dempsey was a very underrated actor at the time. And he was a phenomenal actor. Like, I know he did these romantic comedies, the pizza delivery thing, or I can't remember what that, Lover Boy. And he did all these kind of cheesy, I don't want to say cheesy movies, but he did some of these kind of like the typical, you know, nerdy guy gets the girl type things. But he was a phenomenal actor, just a phenomenal actor. And, you know, obviously Grey's Anatomy changed the course of his life. But I mean, he was just such a good actor, still is. But I mean, even then it was like, he was so good.
Yeah.
He was just such a phenomenal actor.
Yeah. And of course, Patrick Dempsey would go on to have just an enormous career. Court, you mentioned Loverboy. That is an absolutely fantastic movie. Came out in 1989, also starred Kirstie Alley. Court, circling back around or staying with Can't Buy Me Love, of all the cast members from Can't Buy Me Love, did you become friends with any of those guys?
Well, I became pretty good friends with Eric Bruscotter, who played Big John in that. We became friends. We still talk now and then. Gerardo and I became pretty good friends. And, you know, we kind of text message back and forth. He's kind of a very religious dude, lives in Kentucky now, you know, Rico Suave, man.
Yeah, man.
And, but he was like, you know, I think everybody kind of went there, you know, it was, we were also 23, 24. Some guys were 21 and 20, you know, we were all young. And, you know, I mean, it's like, I remember, I think it was Courtney Gaines. Courtney Gaines was like a lot of guys, you know, I didn't understand, like, while you're working on one movie, you should be trying to get a job on another movie. And they were, they'd been around in the business a little longer. And, you know, they were, you know, Courtney was working on getting in Colors with Sean Penn, and Gerardo got in that as well. And, you know, everybody was trying to get in Less Than Zero, which was the movie that was filming. And we all wanted to get in that. And, you know, so it was kind of like, it was a weird time. It was like, you know, it was kind of a time where everybody was, there were a lot of movies being made like that, you know, a lot of the kind of teen movies. And then they just ended, and then it stopped. You know, there was a big writer strike in 1989, right in that time, there was a huge writer strike, and it just kind of, the business shut down. It was, you know, back then there weren't 50 networks, you know, there were four networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox. Those were the four networks, and Fox was brand new. And basically Fox showed The Simpsons and Married with Children. That was it. And so, you know, when the writer's strike hit, you know, it kind of shut down. There was no TV season for a year. Then they kind of invented this thing called reality TV.
Ugh, gross.
And it f-ing ruined our industry and still has.
Yeah, it's pretty awful, man. It's
never been the same.
Yeah.
I f-ing hate every one of them. I think they're pieces of shit. I think they're stupid. It's like, make quality programming. Nobody cares. You know, it's like, oh, so many people watch this. It's like, because there's nothing else on.
Hey, man, I feel your pain. Yeah, it's pretty god awful. I don't think I've ever watched a reality TV show, man. Honestly, I can honestly say that. Maybe back in the day, Real World, a few times on MTV, but that's about it. Court, when you guys were filming Can't Buy Me Love, was it pretty much just strictly business and you guys would shoot for the day and y'all would each go your own way? Or were you guys hanging out off the set as well?
Well, yeah, we all hung out. Well, that's the magic of being on location. You know, I think there's a big difference in, you know, working, you know, when you see a group that, if you're working, especially like that, where we're working on location. So everybody lives in Los Angeles and we're all in Tucson together and we're all staying in the same, you know, we were staying in this hotel there, motel, if you want to call it that, you know, this, you know, it was great. And we all stayed there. We all hung out. We all hung out all the time because that's just what you do. There's nowhere else to go. I mean, so yeah, we all hung out together all the time.
That's cool. Earlier, Court, you mentioned Gerardo. That would be Gerardo Mejia. Gerardo played the role of Ricky in Can't Buy Me Love. You also mentioned Rico Suave. Rico Suave would be a huge hit in 1990 by Gerardo. Court, at the time of filming Can't Buy Me Love, you said you became friends with Gerardo. Did you know that Rico Suave and that his music career at that point in time was in the works?
Absolutely. Yeah, he was. I remember we had, he was living, I remember he lived in Diamond Bar, which was like really weird, you know, like Orange, you know, this kind of Inland Empire city. And he, you know, was, you know, very, comes, came from a very nice, good, you know, you know, Hispanic family. And he was just such a sweet guy. And yeah, I remember we were doing something and I can't remember. We were in his car and I just remember he was playing this music for me and he was like, dude, yeah. And it was like his music. And it was like, wow. Okay. Not my music, not what I'm into, but
yeah,
more power to you, brother, you know, but it was like really cool. Yeah. He was like, he's solid.
That's so funny, man. And yeah, Court, you mentioned Diamond Bar. I guess that's where Gerardo was living at the time, was Diamond Bar. Diamond Bar is a city in East Los Angeles. Also, Court, for the people listening who don't know, Rico Suave was an absolutely huge hit man back in the day in 1990. It went top 10. It was enormous. Gerardo becomes just a superstar, man. When you heard Rico Suave back then, what did you think of it?
Oh, I thought it was the greatest thing ever, man. Everybody did. I mean, I just thought it was like, was just so cool to see. You know, you want to see. I'm not one of these people that want to see your, you know, I don't, just because they're successful doesn't mean I can't be successful. You know, it doesn't affect me one way or the other. So I was happy for him, man. I just thought it was so cool. And it was like, I do remember I used to see him out at nightclubs, you know, and he'd have the, you know, the bandana with the hair extensions all hanging out the back. And I would fuck with him a little bit and go up and pull on his pony, you know, and he's like, Hey man, don't, you know, it'll all come out, you know, it's not real. But he was just such a great guy. And he still is. He's a sweetheart, man.
That's so great, man. And yeah, that's pretty funny that that his hair wasn't real. But yeah, man, the ripped jeans, the open shirt, the bandana, the long hair. That's funny that you would also pull on his hair at the clubs. That's pretty damn funny, man. Court, when was the last time you talked to Gerardo?
We texted back and forth. We still do all the time, you know. Just, you know, he's just such a great guy.
That's fantastic. Court, the female lead in the movie, Cindy Mancini, played by Amanda Peterson, died of an accidental overdose in 2015. Any take, Court, on what was going on with her, what happened to her, the things that she was dealing with in her life?
Just sad. Sad.
Yeah, for sure.
That's all you can say, man. Just sad, you know?
Yeah, no doubt, man. It sucks. Did you keep in touch with her through the years?
I did for a little while, but it had been a long time. You know, it had been a long time. A friend, I stay in touch with a girl named Darcy DeMoss. Darcy played one of the characters in the movie, and Darcy and I still talk all the time. And we were kind of planning. We did a Can't Buy Me Love reunion screening a few years back. It's probably been 3 or 4 years, and maybe longer. Hell, I don't know. And everybody was there, you know, except Patrick wasn't there. And Amanda, I want to say, for some reason, I can't remember if she was still alive then, but it's just sad. It's just sad. There's no other way to describe it. It's just sad.
Yeah, man, I hear you. Court, you mentioned Darcy DeMoss. Darcy DeMoss played the role of Patty in the movie Can't Buy Me Love. Court, in the movie, you had a couple of scenes with Amy Dolenz, who played the character of Fran. Court, when was the last time you spoke to or saw Amy Dolenz?
Well, I used to see her. It has to have been at least 10 years now. But yeah, I used to see Amy. I used to see Amy a lot because Darcy used to throw Oscar parties or, you know, Christmas parties or whatever. And I know Darcy and her husband, Jack, very well. And they would throw parties at their house. And I would see Amy there with her husband. And Amy's sweetheart, man. I haven't talked to her in a long time, but yeah.
Gotcha. Amy Dolenz did a really nice job in the 1989 movie, She's Out of Control, starring Tony Danza. Court, I graduated from LSU in Baton Rouge. I got some Can't Buy Me Love trivia for you, Court. All right, here we go, man. What actor or actress is from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, that was in the movie Can't Buy Me Love?
Courtney Gaines?
Incorrect.
Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Who would be from Baton Rouge, Louisiana?
Come on, Court, you got this. How about this, man? If I give you the name of the character, you think you could get it?
Probably.
All right, here we go. Iris.
Oh, Devin DeVasquez?
That is correct. Devin DeVasquez is from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Wow. I haven't talked to her. I haven't seen her since then.
Playboy Playmate back in, I believe it was 1985, has a huge following on Instagram with almost like, I think 245,000 followers. Court, you had a classic line in the movie Can't Buy Me Love, and it'll pop up every once in a while, man, like on some 80s memes and whatnot. But of course, that line that I'm talking about is, Quinton is in. Let the fun be. Such a great line, man. Still gets said to this day, Court. What do you think about that, man?
I love that. It's like great. I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, I don't want to hear. It's like, I just think it's great, you know? I think it's really cool. I mean, I'm happy. I'm proud of that movie. You know, I'm not embarrassed by any means. It was such a great, like, we were lucky, man. We were lucky to get to do a great movie like that, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, there's nothing to be embarrassed by. It's just classic material. It's classic stuff. I mean, it's just so good, man. Court, another scene that I'm thinking about, another line from you that I'm thinking about is when you guys are eating lunch outside. Kenneth is talking to Patty. You're sitting at the lunch table and you say, Kenneth Wormman is trying to pull a Ronald McDonald Miller scam. You get up, you walk over to Kenneth. Ronald gets up. He walks over to you. He grabs the baseball bat, slams the baseball bat on the lunch table. That's the scene I'm talking about. Do you remember shooting that scene?
I remember shooting that scene. I remember that I was really, I think I had a fever that, I think I was sick that day. And I think it was like, I just remember that, like, Patrick, like I said, Patrick was a great actor, and his girlfriend at the time, or his wife at the time, was an acting teacher. And, you know, it was very difficult he basically really kind of lived the role. So he didn't really hang out with us. So Patrick wouldn't really hang out with us. We were all buddies and we all hung out all the time, but Patrick really didn't hang out with us. So that scene. I mean, it was just kind of the way it went down, you know? And I just remember, I think we did it in like two takes. We didn't do it over and over again. We did it. And it was like, thank you. Okay, we're done. I do remember, though, that it was like the first time people started clapping in a movie. And I was like, I fucking love that thing was like, that's what that, I just like that. It was a cool thing.
That's cool, man. Great scene. Pretty impressive, too, that you guys only did it in two takes. That's awesome. Court, you had mentioned for the Can't Buy Me Love reunion that you guys did a few years back. Patrick Dempsey wasn't there. Any particular reason why that you know of as to why he didn't show up?
Well, I think he was working on something at the time. I don't think it was a slight at us. I think it was just one of those things where, you know, and it wasn't like, you know, Disney threw this big thing. We were at a theater in Santa Monica, although I will say it was freaking packed, man. And I think I'm going to see if I have a photo. I think I have a photo of everyone that was there. And
yeah, cool. Check and see.
I think I do have a photo of that. I think I can, and I can probably tell you when it was. That's how long ago it was.
Cool.
Let's see. Yeah. Okay. So this was Jesus. So it was 2011.
Wow. Yeah. That was a while ago.
That long ago.
Yeah.
So Max Perlick, Courtney Gaines, Darcy DeMoss, the writer Michael Swerdlick, Gerardo, and Eric Bruscotter. So pretty much, I don't know when Amanda passed away, but I don't think it was, I think she passed away after that.
2015 is when she died.
Yeah, so it was before she passed away. She was living in Colorado, so that's why she wasn't there. I think Amy lived in LA at the time. And that would have pretty much been Tina Caspary, I think, was the other girl in it.
Yep.
And I want to say she might have been there. I don't remember her being there, but we did a Q&A after, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, there wasn't a, for some reason, I can't remember why, but it was like, yeah. A lot of people showed up. Michael, the writer, Mark Berg had gone on to, you know, he was like Charlie Sheen's manager, and, you know, he produced all the Saw movies, and he's a freaking billionaire now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But yeah, all the rest of us are just what we are.
You mentioned a few names there, Court. Let's go over some of those names. Max Perlick played the role of Lester. Read them and weep, boys. Max Perlick also, fun little fact, in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, played the role of Anderson. Here! That's Max Perlick. You mentioned Courtney Gaines played the role of Kenneth Wormman, has gone on to have a really nice career. We talked about Darcy DeMoss earlier. We talked about Gerardo. Eric Bruscotter played the role of Big John. And Tina Caspary played the role of Barbara. And yeah, Mark Berg, Went on to have a huge career, executive producer of Two and a Half Men, also executive producer of the 1993 hit movie, The Sandlot. So, Court, with that being said, few people from Can't Buy Me Love went on to have, you know, pretty nice careers.
Few people. Out of the whole thing, out of all that, Mark Berg, who produced it, and Patrick Dempsey, doesn't have to worry.
Yeah, Patrick Dempsey's obviously set. But I tell you what, man, like I said, people from that movie went on to have a nice career. Max Perlick has done a ton of stuff. Courtney Gaines has done a ton of stuff. Eric Bruscotter has done a lot of stuff. You yourself, Court, did quite a bit of stuff. And also, too, man, let's not forget about Seth Green.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Seth. Seth killed it, yeah.
Seth Green played the role of Chucky Miller. Cards with the Tards. So, Court, in a situation like Patrick Dempsey, who goes on to have a huge career, becomes an A-list celebrity, just an enormous movie star. How does that work, man? I mean, is there luck involved with that? Is that straight talent? It's a little bit of both. How does that all come to be?
Hollywood's lucky, man. It's all a little bit of luck and a little bit of, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I wouldn't trade my life for anything. You know, I love my life. You know, I've done stand-up now for, you know, going on 19 years. If I would have done a bunch of movies back to back, I probably never would have started doing stand-up, you know, and I love doing stand-up. I wouldn't trade stand-up for anything. It's the greatest thing I've ever done. And the truth is like, you know, and I think it maybe it's just becoming older and understanding this, is that monetary success is not shit. You know, it's are you happy? And I'm happy. I like my life.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. And as long as we're happy, that's it, man. That's all that matters. Court, wanted to ask you, you said earlier that you made roughly around $10,000 off of Can't Buy Me Love. What does a guy like Patrick Dempsey as the male lead in 1987 make off of that movie? How much money do you think Patrick Dempsey made off of Can't Buy Me Love?
I have no idea. No idea. No idea what it was. I mean, you know, it's a low budget. I mean, he probably made a, you know, 100,000 to, I have no idea. I can't even begin to guess. I have no idea. Because he wasn't a huge name then.
Yeah, exactly.
He'd been on a TV series, that only lasted one season, you know, and so I have no idea.
Gotcha. Well, if it was $100,000 in 1987 and to be that young, yeah, that's pretty good money. Court, what did you do after 1987 and when Can't Buy Me Love was over?
Well, I mean, I just kind of did little things. I did a little job here, a little job there. You know, then the writer's strike hit, and then it was like, you know, kind of sucked for a while. And then I was just like, I don't know if this is what the life I want. I don't know if this is the life I want to have. So I moved to New Mexico I moved to Santa Fe for like a year and just lived in a ranch house out there and just kind of chilled out and worked at the radio station in town. And then,
okay, gotcha.
And then I moved to New York for a couple of years, and I went to New York, and I started kind of getting back into acting. I took a year off, and then I started starting to audition for things in New York. But New York's, you know, even then was very Broadway oriented, and I don't sing. So, and I don't dance. So,
right.
I was just like, all right, well, if I'm going to do this, this is what your life's going to be. Let's go back to LA. So I went back to LA and started started working again, started doing a lot of theater, and, you know, I just worked, you know, just kind of did what I could do. And then, then 2001, I got the bug to try stand up. The rest is history, man. Started doing stand up. And that's kind of where I have really put all my focus for the last 18 years.
Very nice. And we're going to talk about your stand-up here, Court, in just a minute. But I want to talk to you about this really quickly. In 1989, you land an episode, you land a role on the TV series Beverly Hills 90210. Tell me a little bit about that.
That was one of the greatest episodes I've ever, the greatest jobs I've ever done in television. And let me explain why.
Please do.
Because I went and I auditioned for it. I went to the audition. It was a half a mile. The audition was not very far from my house. So I drove to the audition. I didn't have to wait. I walked in, auditioned, walked out, went home, got a call the next day. You booked the job.
Boom.
And then they said, we'll call you. You're going to work on Tuesday. They called me on Monday and they said, you're working at a location called Jar. It was a block and a half from my house.
Sweet.
And they said, you report at 10 a.m.
Okay.
I showed up at 10 a.m. They put me in makeup by 10:30. I was dressed out of makeup on set. We did three takes and by 11:15, I was out the door and I was home by 11:30. So the total timeout that took for me was maybe 2.5 hours from audition to filming.
Heck yeah, man. That's not bad. Quick and easy.
Those are the best jobs ever.
Sure.
Those are the best jobs. It's like I've worked on shows. I worked on Arrested Development. I did two episodes of Arrested Development. I rehearsed horseback riding for 4 days. 4 days I went to rehearsal for horseback riding. 4 days.
Okay.
Drove 45 minutes each way to this ranch to sit on a horse for a total of maybe a half hour, 45 minutes. For 4 days I did that. I sat on set for 11 hours and 30 minutes.
Jeez.
And worked for 15. Drove an hour there, an hour home. Worked 5 days.
And let me guess, we're on screen maybe for 5 minutes?
And I am on screen for a total of 15 seconds.
Yep, I believe it.
Cut all of our line.
Yeah.
I got paid a crap load of money. It was great. I'm not bitching. Enjoyed every minute enjoyed being on set. But I literally took me 8 days for 15 seconds.
Yeah, it's crazy, man, the way it works. The 90210 gig was sweet, man.
Yeah. Here's one that literally took all of two and a half hours, maybe total time. And I'm on screen way more. And this was all of, it was at least that long. I probably more than 8 days it took. It was insane. And, just fucking in cowboy gear. They made me shave down. They put it was insane.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. What role did you play in 90210?
90210, I played a computer date. Yeah, this girl went on a computer date. And I was her computer date. It's easy. I'm sitting at dinner, had a computer date, blah, 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 blah. And I'm fucking out. Easy. I was like, yes,
Yeah, man. Quick and easy. In and out. That's always a good thing. Court, residuals. From all the stuff that you've done over the years, how are your residuals?
Some are good. Can't Buy Me Love still sends me, it's good.
All right.
Can't Buy Me Love. I still get, some cash from that. Teen Wolf, they didn't credit us, so it didn't get through. But also I heard that they, the studio went bankrupt. It was Orion that did it. And I don't know that they're even paying the regular actors a lot off that thing.
Interesting. Court, let's move on to your stand-up, man. I guess my first question to you is, what do you find to be the main difference between stand-up and acting?
It's just like the difference between doing theater and TV. Like if you've ever done theater, there's something so alive about doing theater because it's like there's no second take. You can't stop, start over. That's why I laugh at these people that they call stars.
Oh man, here we go.
They're on a fucking Bachelor show or they're on some dumbass reality show or, it's like they're not actors. They're personalities, give you that, but they're not actors. They're not trying to be any. It's like, go do the Clifford Odets, The Big Knife, a period piece where you have to say words that wouldn't normally come out of your mouth and in a cadence that wouldn't come out of your mouth. And you perform this 5 nights a week on stage. And, it's not the same thing. It's just not the same. It's not the same. There's something about doing theater that's just, I can't explain it. It's just so invigorating and it's amazing. And that's the same with stand-up, man. You're on stage and it's your own material. It's your, you're vulnerable. It's like it's just you and a mic. No band, no scene dressing, no props, just you and the crowd.
Yeah, and that's pretty impressive, man. I mean, to get in front of people and talk like that, yeah, that would be pretty intimidating for me, that's for sure. It's pretty easy to be behind a microphone, but in front of people like that would be pretty tough. So what do you do, Court? I mean, how does the process work? Are you just constantly coming up with new material? How does that work?
You have to come up with new material. I mean, it's not easy. Some people are better at it than others. I'm not the best at it, but you know, it takes it. That's why, like, living in a city like Los Angeles or New York, where you can go up and do stuff and fail, you know, because it doesn't always work.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it doesn't. So with comics that are writing their own material, Court, how do they typically come up with the jokes? Do they carry a notebook around with them? And, you know, if something happens in real life, they write it down, like, oh, that's a joke. And then they, you know, go to a club and end up trying it. How does that process usually work?
Yeah, that's kind of what you do. Like, I have a book right over there on the table, and it's like, and I'll have an idea of something and I write it down. And then, you know, when clubs are open again, you know, what you do is you go in the club and you have your idea, and, you know, and you try it. Works, it works. If it doesn't work, you'll know it doesn't work.
Yeah, man, no doubt. I mean, the crowds can be pretty brutal at times. But yeah, man, that's that's an interesting gig. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting. I love it. I love stand up. It's just the best.
That's awesome, man. Very cool that you're doing something that you love. Court, want to circle back around really quickly to residuals. We were talking about residuals earlier when I had John Philbin on the podcast. We talked about residuals. I asked John how his residuals were. He said they were decent, but shortly after the podcast, he sent me a picture of one of his residual checks. Dude, it was for like 35 cents. I mean, it was ridiculous. What is that all about, man?
I'm telling you, it's like the stamp costs more.
Yep.
I mean, they are insane, some of them.
No doubt.
Insane. Like, I'll get a Family Ties residual check for foreign, and it's like 1 cent. And I'm like, why send it? You know? Like, what the fuck? Like, the paper. It costs more for the paper and the stamp.
Yeah, exactly. It's just dumb. I mean, it doesn't even make any sense. I mean, to your point, the paper and the stamp are, you know, worth more than that. Court, a few more questions, man, and then I am going to let you get out of here. Court, when was the last time you went out in public and got recognized?
I mean, every now and then I still get Can't Buy Me Love.
Yeah.
I do get that. I mean, whenever I do stand up. So, you know, last time I did stand up last March. So, the last time I've actually was in a club, it sucks because, like, there's no, I mean, this COVID has really killed the stand-up world. So,
yeah, I'm sure, as it's killed a lot of stuff, unfortunately. Court, top three comedians of all time.
Well,
who you got?
Current or
just overall?
I mean, there's just so many, but Richard Pryor is the top of my list.
Legend.
Richard Pryor, Patrice O'Neill is right up there with one of the all-time greats. And then you got, like, today, like Burr, Chappelle. I mean, there's so many good stand-ups, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I could go deep. I mean, you got, like, Bobby Kelly. You know, fuck, there's so many good ones, man. There's Rich Voss is a great. There are just so many.
What'd you think about Kinison?
Kinison was awesome. Not to me, not as, you know, I mean, I think Kinison was amazing. You know, I think stand-up comedy is like music. And I think that there's different kinds of music and there's different kinds of stand-up. And I think that it's like, some people like rap, some people like country. And it's not to say that country isn't great or rap isn't good. Some people just identify more with rap. Some people identify more with country. And I think that's what stand-up comedy is. And I think people take, you know, you got to remember their jokes. So, you know, we live in a shitty, fucked up society of a bunch of priss-ass motherfuckers that keep getting offended when someone tells a joke. And it's a fucking joke. And if you don't like it, don't go to their show. Don't buy their records. Don't listen to them online. And go yourself. That's my personal opinion about that. Yeah! And it really irks me that people, you know, comment about someone's joke. And it's like, if you don't like the joke, then don't laugh. Don't go to their show. But don't sit and make them apologize for something that they said. You know, it's like, you know, I'm sorry. It just bugs me. It just really bugs me. But I think there's, you know, so I think there's people out there like Sam Kennison, I thought was an amazing guy. Some of his stuff is really funny. You know, I just find Richard Pryor to be, you know, one of the greatest ever because of the way he developed stand-up comedy. He told stories, and I love stories. And that's the same with Patrice O'Neill. And it's like, I mean, Anthony Jeselnik's one of the funniest motherfuckers out there. And it's like, but he is a setup punch joke teller. You know, he has, it's a very defined thing. And it's a craft that he is one of the best at. And, you know, it's like, so there's, so, you know, if you start looking at it, how deep you go, Anthony Jeselnik's one of the greatest. He's like Stephen Wright in that sense. They're very similar in their, in the way they are, you know. Burr is like a Richard Pryor in the sense that the way that he tells stories, and, you know, Dave Chappelle is just a genius, you know, the way he does stuff. And it's just, everybody's different. You know, there's so many great ones out there. But Patrice O'Neill, too bad he's not with us. He's one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, G Court. I wish you would have really told us how you feel, man. But yeah, that was pretty funny, Court. But you know what, man? I do agree with you. Society has gotten rather soft. Court, you mentioned a few names there. Patrice O'Neill unfortunately passed away in 2011 from a heart attack. A very funny guy. You also mentioned one of my favorite guys growing up in the 80s. Another very funny guy. That would be Stephen Wright. Loved him as a kid growing up. But yeah, man, definitely some great comics out there. Court, it is time for some plugs, man. Go ahead, give them to me. Social media platforms, websites, anything you got, go ahead and plug away.
All my stuff is my name. So follow me on Instagram. That's where I post everything. And it's CORTMCCOWN at Court McCowan. And that's same with Twitter, same with Facebook. I mean, Instagram's the easy one. And, you know, but, yeah, I am working on some stuff with one of the guys from the Comedy Store. I've got a little character thing I'm working out. We're going to call it Bobo's Barn. And, I got a little character I developed, which will be a lot of fun. It's a little throwback to the, you'll see, it's a lot of fun. It's going to be, we're going to have some fun with this one. So, but yeah, and I'll post some of that stuff when it comes out, but, you know, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, we'll be back on the road in, you know, 2021. When this ended, I was out on tour with Jeff Ross and Dave Attell. I was doing the Bumpin' Mics tour. And that was one of the greatest tours I've ever been on. So hopefully we pick that back up again.
Very cool, man. Jeff Ross and Dave Attell, two very big names in the stand-up comic realm. Court, we are done, dude. Any final words for any of the listeners listening around the world?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on, man.
Yeah, of course, man. Thanks for taking time out of your day to come on and talk to me. All of your stories, Court, were absolutely fantastic. And Court, best of luck with Bobo's Barn, your acting, any other projects that you might be working on. And hopefully, Court, all this COVID stuff will settle down soon and you'll be able to get back to touring with your stand-up. Thank you again for coming on the show, and best of luck the rest of the way.
Thanks so much, man. I appreciate it. And I'm really happy you had Matt and John on before me.
Right.
So that you could, you know, make me feel like the third guy, you know.
That's
the
great.
Third 80s actor you had on. But I appreciate it, man. It's good to be here.
There you go. Hope everyone enjoyed my conversation with Court McCown. Guys, if you're out there listening in the podcast world, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else it may be, please leave me a 5-star rating. I've been told the way it works is like this, guys. The higher the ratings, the more ratings, the more that the podcast plays into the algorithms and the more that the podcast will get noticed. I guess. I'm not sure. That's what I've been told. So I'm just passing that along to you guys. It would be greatly appreciated if you're listening. If you leave me a 5-star rating. Again, hope everyone enjoyed my conversation with Court McCown. I also hope everyone out there has a safe new year. I will talk to you guys in 2021. Peace.